A number of years ago, I was an assistant rabbi in a shul called Shari Tefillah, and one time I was speaking between Mincha and Mariv on a weeknight, and someone came over to me after Mariv, and he introduced himself. He said his name was Rabbi Chananya Berzon. Rabbi Chananya Berzon is the brother of Rabbi Azariah Berzon, who you may or may not know. He was a reshiva in Landers for a while. I'm not sure where he is now. So Rabbi Berzon is from, I believe he lived in Canada, and he's from a family of Rabbanim. His father was a prominent Rav, siblings prominent Rabbanim. So he told me that when he was starting out in Rabbanus, he told me he was a classmate of Rav Schechter. He liked that I had quoted Rav Schechter by chance. That time I had quoted Rav Schechter in my shir between Mincha and Mariv. So he told me that he was a classmate of Rav Schechter's, and he said that his year in YU Smicha was the first year that they did not require students to learn Hilchos Treifos. That they that to get smicha, you still have to learn shechita, you have to learn melicha, but you didn't have to learn about treifos because it's so impractical for rabbanim nowadays in America. I was never asked a question about a treifos shaila in a chicken. Is this chicken kosher or not? How do we deal with treifos shailas and chickens right now? So the people in Empire, the people in David Elliott, after they shech their chickens and they defeather them, they cut open the chicken and they have a couple of experts there who look at the inside of the chicken, and if they see that there's a problem, that there's a red flag, so they flag it, they put it aside, and they have those couple of experts look at it. By the time it's in the grocery store, by the time it gets to the five towns, there's not going to be a treifos shaila. So he said his year they already decided no more treifos, and he said he took his first position. I forgot where he said the position was, but he took his first position in Rabbanus, and on his first day in his first shul, the local butcher came to him with a shechta chicken and asked a very detailed treifos question on the chicken. And he was told in smicha, don't worry, we're not learning treifos anymore because you're never going to have to know it. And his very first shaila was the shaila milchus treifos. So he was a young guy, he took the chicken and he said to the butcher, excuse me, I have to think about this, it's a very, very good shaila, I'll get back to you. And he sent the butcher on his way, and he called up his father, who is a veteran Rav, and he said to his father, what the heck am I supposed to do now? I don't know what to think about this stuff. I never learned anything about this stuff. And it's not like nowadays where you can take a picture of it with your cell phone and just send it to, he was in Virginia somewhere, his father was there. So what was he going to do? How was he going to answer the shaila? So he told me that story, and he said afterwards the butcher was telling him he was just joking. He knew that he was just messing around with him. But I always wondered like when my tray for chicken shiloh was going to come up, where it's something that you're just so utterly unprepared for. It's like an area of halacha that you wouldn't even have a hava amina to study this area of halacha. And then it came a couple of years ago. I got a phone call on Erev Pesach asking what a nazir should do for charoses at the Seder. It was Erev Pesach, and someone had to prepare charoses for the Seder, but they had a problem because they have a nazir coming to their Seder, and normally one of the ingredients in charoses is you put wine in the charoses. So they had this question of can they prepare the charoses without wine? Is there something that they should replace it with instead? Now, of all the questions I expect to encounter in Rabbanus, and there have certainly been some interesting ones over the years, I never would have expected a Nazirus Shaila to come up. And I believe I told the person that Charoses is the least of the guy's problems because he's got to worry about Dalet Kosos also, and obviously he can't have wine for Dalet Kosos. But the bigger problem that he has is that from a contemporary perspective, we would never ever recommend that a person become a Nazir. How grossly irresponsible for a person to decide to become a Nazir when we don't have the ability to get out of our Nazirus. And Nazirus, you take a Stam Nazirus to Shloshim Yom, but the Nazirus will never end until you can bring Karbanos. And if we don't have any guarantee of when we're going to be able to bring Karbanos, so the Nazirus will just go on and on and on. So every once in a while, every couple of generations, you have a special kind of tzaddik, like the Nazir in Yerushalayim, the Talmud of Rav Kook, the Nazir in Yerushalayim. So every once in a while you have such a special tzaddik who could be a Nazir his whole life, but to recommend that a regular person should be a Nazir, very, very strange. So, but what about in the times of the Beis HaMikdash? We read about Nazirus in this week's parasha. That was all an introduction. We read about Nazirus in this week's parasha. What about the time of the Beis HaMikdash? In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, is this something that we would recommend? Is this something that's considered a heroic act for a person to decide, I'm going to be a Nazir? Is that a good thing? Or do we view that as a sign of weakness, that the person is missing something? Is the Nazir extra holy, and that's why he's so great, he's a Kadosh? Or do we assume that no, he's not holy enough to live a life of holiness in the context of this world, so he has to separate himself from this world in order to achieve holiness because of his weakness, because he's unable to achieve holiness the way most of us are supposed to achieve holiness? Is he more like the American kid who decides to enlist in the military in order to honor his country? Or is he more like the, so he's enlisting to honor God? Or is he more like the American kid who checks into rehab to take care of a problem that has festered for way too long? Meaning, well, the first case is a heroic action. The second case is Nebuch. The guy's got problems. The guy's got issues. So he has to deal with those issues. And the way this person deals with those issues is by becoming a Nazir. What is the model of Nazirus? So there are two sides to this debate. This issue was the source of very healthy debate in Chazal, and then again in the times of the Rishonim. The Gemara Maseches Tainis Taf Yud Aleph tells us, Amar Shmuel, Kol Yoshev B'Tainis Nikra Chote. Anyone who fasts unnecessarily is considered to be a sinner. Savra ki aitana, the tainer of Lazar Kapar Barebi Omer, Ma Tamalomar, what does the pasuk mean when it says in this week's parsha, V'chiper alav mea sher chata ala nefesh, that the Nazir has to get a kapara for the sin that he did? V'chibe is a nefesh chata za, what sin did he do? What did he do wrong? Elashet siyer atzmo min ayayin. It was a sin to deprive himself of wine. So says the Gemara Velo Dvarim Kal V'chomer, so you have a simple Kal V'chomer. If a guy who only deprived himself of wine is considered a chote for depriving himself of that pleasure, a person who deprives himself of everything, a person who decides to fast, so all the more so he's a chote. Rabbi Lazar Omer, Rabbi Lazar says, no, he's not a chote. Nikra kadosh, he's called the holy one. Shenemar, also in this week's parsha, Kadoshia Gdal Parasar Rosho, Umazeshl Tiratzwal Midavrecha Nikra Kadosh. If a Nazir who only refrains from one benefit, from one pleasure, like wine, is called the Kadosh Hamitzaratz, when we call Davar Alachas Kama Vikama, then all the more so someone who deprives himself of many of this worldly pleasures is considered to be a Kadosh. So there you have a very clear machlokes. Is the Nazir a Chote or is the Nazir a Kadosh? And then again in the times of the Rishonim, the issue is debated. The Ramban writes in connection with the Karban Chatas that the Nazir has to bring at the conclusion of his Nazirus. The Ramban says, V'tam ha-chatos she-yakrav ha-nazir b'yom lo simei nizro lo nisparish. It doesn't say explicitly what the reason that he has to bring Karban Chatas is. What sin did he do? Va'al derech ha-pshat ki ha-ish hazeh chote nafsho b'melos ha-nazirus ki hu ata nazur mikdushaso v'avodas ha-shem v'ro'i ha-yelo she-yazir li-olam v'yamur kol yom av nazir v'kadosh ha-lukav. Says the Ramban, where is his sin? His sin is in leaving his nazirus, abandoning a higher lifestyle that he had maintained throughout the duration of his nazirus, and now he's going to go back to just being a regular guy. That's a sin, and that's why he's called a chote. But the clear understanding of the Ramban is, while he is a Nazir, he's on a higher level. It's a greater thing. It's a greater level of existence. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos seems to refer to this carbon in a very, very different way. The Rambam writes, Shema Yomer Adam, someone might say to himself, since having being a Baal Taiva and other bad midos can be very damaging to a person, I'll distance myself in the greatest possible way, as far away from these midos as possible. To the other extreme, there's the famous Rambam about the golden mean. So I won't eat meat, I won't drink wine, I won't get married, I won't live in a nice home, I won't wear nice clothing, I'll wear sackcloth, like the monks do. Gam zed derech ra'i hiva asur le'lechba. That is an evil path, and it is asur for one to take that path in life. Hamahalech b'derech zu nikra chote. If someone takes that path, he is a sinner. Sharehu omer b'nazir, because it says by a nazir v'chiper alav that he needs a kapara of me'ashar chata al nefesh. So, and he quotes the Gemara in Tainus that he's considered a chote for depriving himself of wine. So again, the Rambam says, uses this concept of Naziris to say that this is not the proper path that a person should go on, that a person is not allowed to afflict himself. All of these things, the Rambam says, this is what Shlomo HaMelech was referring to when he said, Al tihi tzadik harbe va'al tischak im yoser. Person should not be a tzaddik harbe. You shouldn't be too big of a tzaddik, which means that the person is not supposed to deprive himself more than necessary. So the Rambam clearly views the idea of remaining in the state of Nazirus as a sin. So not only do we have in the Amoraim a split, we have in the Rishonim a clear split, the Ramban versus the Rambam. Rabbi Asher Brander, in his Sefer on Parsha Teachings, I think it's called, points out a remarkable Ibn Ezra that seems to provide a perspective that may allow us to find some middle ground between the Rambam and the Ramban. The Ibn Ezra notes the similarity between the words Nazir and Nezer. Nezer al Rosha. What's a Nezer? Nezer is a crown. And essentially, the Nazir is supposed to be associated on some level with royalty. He writes, Migzeras Nezer. The term, the etymology of the term Nazir is from Nezer. Va'eid ki Nezer le'lukav al rosho. Ve'enenu rachok. This is very, very likely, says the Ibn Ezra, that's what the word means. Da. Ki kol b'nei adam avdei taivas ha'olam. That all people in the world are servants to their taivos. We are servants to our desires. V'ha'melech ha'amiti, the true king, sheyesh lo nezer v'ataras malchus b'rosho, someone who has a real crown on his head, who's wearing the crown of malchus, kol mi shehu chafshi min ha'taivos. When a person defeats his taivos, he is free from taivos. That's nezer. The point is that true freedom is in the ability to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam, unburdened by the servitude to our taivos. If there's a television show that a person can absolutely not miss, must DVR it, or else I will die, or else something horrible will happen, I need to have it. Or a restaurant that he must try. Well, he is not free to let his neshama soar. He is somewhat impeded by his taivos, regardless of his station in life. As Rabbi Brander alludes to, who is the more free man, Natan Sharansky or Bill Clinton? One was a prisoner, but he was soaring spiritually, while the other was the most powerful man in the world, but couldn't control his own urges and desires. Who is more free, ultimately? While the Rambam and Ramban disagree about the means to achieve the goal, they're very likely in agreement about the goal itself. And the goal itself is chayrus, is to be free, to be a free man. For the Rambam, we express freedom by eating that one piece of cake, but not more. By showing that we are able to engage in the taiva without engaging excessively, without losing our way, without indulging more than necessary. To take a little bit, having that one piece of cake, that one piece of dessert, without having to have the entire pie. For the Ramban, one expresses freedom by not having any at all. The message of the Nazir is a message of discipline, of taking control of our own lives, of being disciplined people. If we want to train ourselves and to train our children, God willing, for success, the recipe is not by indulging every whim and every desire that they have. That's a recipe for servitude. A couple of years ago, I was at a wedding in Tunica, Mississippi. It was an Abitan wedding. One of the Abitans got married, Ariel Abitan got married in Tunica, Mississippi. How do you spell Mississippi in the Ksuba? Mem Yud Samach Samach Yud Samach Samach Yud Pei Pei. You double up all the, that's sort of Nuts of Greenblatt Paskind. Very interesting. So anyway, the gashmius at the wedding was pretty good, I have to say. But right before the Badekin, the Chassan spoke for a few minutes, and he articulated the profound impact that his grandfather, Zichrona Livracha, a poor Talmud Chacham, who was the patriarch of a remarkable family, had on his life. The grandfather used to come and learn with his grandsons here in the Beis Medrash, you remember, right? We used to call him Sabitan, because Abitan, Saba, okay, get it? So he used to come and learn here all the time. Very, very big tzaddik. And I was very struck by the ability to focus on the important things amidst all of the really, really nice gashmias of the wedding. So how did the family pull it off to maintain that kind of focus even as, or Hashem, they achieved a degree of material success? So the grandfather, according to Ariel, I trust he was telling the true story, the grandfather had nothing, and he didn't value gashmias at all. He had nothing and he didn't care about it. He had suffered a massive heart attack when he was in his mid-30s, and he was pretty much living on borrowed time for the rest of his life. I believe the reason one of his sons became a very, very successful cardiologist was because he wanted to be able to help people like his father. He suffered a massive, massive heart attack, and every day was a gift. So he shouldn't have been there. Every day was a gift. And when he lived to marry off his first child, the father of this chassan, he wanted to say a bracha shechianu of shechianu b'shem u'malchus. So he asked Rav Ben Chaim Shlita, can I say a shechianu? That here I am, every day is a shechianu. And now I get to see the marriage of my child, can I say a shechianu? And Rav Ben Chaim told him, buy a new suit, and you'll say a shechianu on the suit, and that will be for both. And that way you can say a shechianu b'shem u'malchus. And he mamish couldn't stomach the thought that a new suit is reason for a shechianu, but marrying off his son is not a reason for a shechianu. Raising I don't think he had any daughters. Right? Is not a reason for a shechianu. He never bought a new suit in his entire life. never happened. Never would have dawned on him. When he was older, he would begrudgingly take his kids' hand-me-downs. But his own suits were dirt cheap. So with tears streaming down his face, right before he walked his son down to the chuppah, he gave his son a hug and he said a bracha b'shem u'malchus. And that was the message that the family took. That the idea is, it's not that we have to disengage entirely from gashmias, that we can never enjoy good food, that we can't enjoy living in a nice place. It's very hard to disengage entirely from gashmias, and it's not really our avoda to disengage from gashmias. Our avodah is to use that model of the Rambam. Not to disengage. To engage, but not to over-engage. Not to over-emphasize. For children, it's kimat impossible. It's very, very hard to show children gashmias and say, but you should know there are limits. Children are very, very bad at limits. But it's something that has to be worked on over and over and over again to just emphasize and hope that the message gets through. That this isn't what really matters. What really matters to us is our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, our relationship with our fellow Jews, with our fellow human beings, with the society around us. What really matters is to be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim. What really matters is Bein Adam La'atzmo, to become a more refined person. And when we are successful with that balance of the Rambam, not to disengage, but to emphasize the right things, to realize what's truly important in life, then the nazir becomes a nazir. And one doesn't have to be a nazir his whole life in order to achieve that status of a nazir elokav al roshah.